I do hear it, and it does hurt my feelings. So, you know, you can get your anger out that way. You don't necessarily need to call and rake me over the coals. Breaking news out of Philadelphia. Six police officers have been shot while serving a warrant. None of them with life-threatening injuries. A man is barricaded inside his house in the Nicetown, Tioga neighborhood in Philadelphia and is apparently live-streaming the siege because that is the world that we live in. So we'll be hearing more about that in the days to come. What we've been hearing about since Saturday is Jeffrey Epstein. And I heard this when I got into the car Saturday morning. I happened to jump in the car just as the morning news was beginning. And the first thing they said is, Jeffrey Epstein is dead. And my reaction was, I'm not surprised. That was pretty much it. I was not surprised one bit that Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. If you know the history of high-profile child sex scandals, of which there have been many over the years, through the decades, you know that it is extremely rare, it is beyond rare, for anyone to actually get prosecuted for any of this. Because everybody who might get prosecuted tends to wind up dead before they wind up in front of a judge. There was some hope that the Jeffrey Epstein case might be different, as there is hope every single time. But, once again, justice is denied, and the person who could answer all the questions is no longer with us. From the New York Times via MSN, the two staff members who were guarding the jail unit where Jeffrey Epstein apparently killed himself. Now, before I get into this, I heard the report Saturday morning, and I said I'm not surprised. I may have said I'm surprised it took this long. But I definitely, the first words out of my mouth were, I'm not surprised. I was talking about it to my wife, my lovely wife, Molly, on Saturday night. And I said to her, here's what's going to happen. And this was before any of the reporting had come out. This is what I said on Saturday night. Here's what's going to happen. Here's what you're going to find out. The protocols for keeping Jeffrey Epstein in prison were not followed. There is no video because the cameras mysteriously aren't working and the guards were not where they were supposed to be. I said Saturday night, we were at Jersey Boys, highly recommended, North Shore Music Theater. I said, these three things are going to happen. There's going to be no video. There's going to be some sort of irregularity in the way that they were holding him, and the guards are going to be nowhere to be found. Well, this came from the New York Times today. The two staff members who were guarding the jail unit where Jeffrey Epstein apparently killed himself fell asleep, failed to check on him for about 3 hours, and falsified records to cover up their mistake, according to several law enforcement and prison officials with knowledge of the matter. Those disclosures came on Tuesday as the two employees were placed on administrative leave and the warden of the jail, the Metropolitan Correctional Center in Manhattan, was temporarily reassigned. Pending the outcome of the investigation into Mr. Epstein's death, the Justice Department announced. The two staff members in the special housing unit where Mr. Epstein was held, 9 South, falsely recorded in a log that they had checked on the financier who was facing sex trafficking charges every 30 minutes as was required, two of the officials said. Such false entries in an official log could constitute a federal crime. In fact, the two people guarding Mr. Epstein had been asleep for some or all of the 3 hours, three of the officials said. So Jeffrey Epstein, you may recall, was found a couple of weeks ago unconscious in his jail cell with marks on his neck. His cellmate, a former New York City cop who was convicted of murdering somebody and who apparently was a pretty sizable dude. I've seen pictures of him. He's like a big dude. We're talking like bodybuilder tall, big dude. Could play tight end in the NFL, big dude. Slept through the whole thing. Had no recollection of what might have happened to Mr. Epstein. Mr. Epstein was supposed to be on suicide watch. He was taken off of suicide watch. He was supposed to have somebody else in the cell with him. his former cellmate had been moved out earlier that day. And then in come the two guards, who promptly fall asleep. Not before noting that they had checked on him every 30 minutes. The Attorney General, William P. Barr, on Monday ordered the Justice Department's Inspector General to look into how Mr. Epstein had managed to commit suicide while in custody and why he had been taken off a suicide watch 12 days earlier. William Barr, by the way, is pretty worked up about this. He's been walking around Washington, D.C. screaming at anyone who will listen. I don't know if he's made a trip to New York to scream at people yet, but one is coming. The warden, Lamine Nadai, will be transferred to a Bureau of Prisons office in Philadelphia while the FBI and the Justice Department's Inspector General conduct inquiries. The Justice Department said in a statement that it might take additional punitive actions, probably not against the warden, Lamine Nadai. Here's what always happens in these situations. If you follow stories about government screw-ups, you know how it goes. The low-level employees get thrown under the bus and sold out. Their managers get reassigned. Sometimes they get promoted, but they never face any consequences whatsoever for the misbehavior of their subordinates. Prison staff discovered Mr. Epstein, 66, dead in his cell at the Metropolitan Correctional Center at 6:30 a.m. on Saturday, officials said. He had apparently hanged himself with a bed sheet, likely fastening the sheet to a top bunk and pitching himself forward, law enforcement and prison officials said. Mr. Epstein had been waiting trial until we know his story. He had apparently tried to commit suicide once before on July 23rd, shortly after he was denied bail, which resulted in him being placed on suicide watch, prison officials familiar with the incident have said. 6 days later, prison officials determined that he was no longer a threat to his own life and returned him to a cell in the 9 South Housing Unit with another inmate. That inmate was later transferred out of the cell, leaving Mr. Epstein alone on Friday night. Though it is standard practice to house people who have recently been taken off suicide watch with another person, the prison did not replace Mr. Epstein's cellmate. The Justice Department, which oversees the Bureau of Prisons, did not immediately identify the two correctional officers who were placed on administrative leave. Two prison officials familiar with the incident said the two staff members had not looked in on Mr. Epstein for about 3 hours before he was found. One of the staff members was a former correctional officer who had taken a different position at the detention center that did not involve guarding detainees. He had volunteered to work again as a correctional officer for the extra overtime pay, a law enforcement official and an employee at the jail said. The second officer, a woman who was assigned to that wing, had been ordered to work overtime because the jail was short-staffed. One of these two guards apparently had been working overtime for 5 days straight. Doesn't surprise me that you're going to fall asleep in that situation. Theoretically, the other guard should be awake. Neither one of them is getting paid to sleep, first of all. They're getting paid to be awake and guard the prisoners. But if they both happen to fall asleep, well, this is the situation we wind up in. You have two, so if one falls asleep, the other one says, hey, don't fall asleep. But if they're both there, they're both tired, and they're both in it together to say, yeah, let's just sleep through this. I'll mark down the logs. We have the opportunity. James Petrucci, the warden of a federal prison in Otisville, New York, has been named acting warden of the Manhattan jail. Now, there's one interesting little tag on this from the New York Times. I'm looking for this. It might not have been in this one. It might have been in a different article that I read. There was one source that reported that the guards union was furious that these two guards had been kicked out and suspended while the warden was promoted elsewhere. And I was like, oh, you get it. You understand. So why was I not surprised by this? Because there was an approximately 0.001% chance that Jeffrey Epstein was going to live long enough to see the inside of a courtroom. Why is that? Because if you know the history of high-profile child sex scandals, which is what this is, then you know that the key witnesses always wind up dead. This is why when Epstein was arguing to be let out of prison to go home, that was a no-go. If you want to keep that that person of interest, that suspect, alive, you keep them in prison where you can keep an eye on them. Now, what I don't understand is why you cannot come up with a cell, right, that has no opportunity for people to commit suicide. You see stuff like this in the movies and on TV all the time. You're put in a room. Every surface is smooth. There's nothing that you could hang a rope off of if you wanted to. Well, apparently these, you can just put a rope on the bunks and kill, jump off the top bunk and kill yourself. What? Why is that there? Where is the other prisoner who is supposed to be housed with Mr. Epstein? Where is the video inside the cell? Or at least pointing at the window in the cell so that you can see if there's any activity in the cell. Where are the guards? They're asleep. If you know the history of high-profile child sex scandals, the witnesses always wind up dead. The ringleaders always wind up dead. Don't tell me that A.G. Barr doesn't know this. He does. That's why he's furious. Now we get into this whole thing, okay, of what happened here. Because this isn't necessarily just about Jeffrey Epstein, okay? Jeffrey Epstein is the ringleader. And for those who haven't been following this, Jeffrey Epstein kept some pretty heavy company throughout his adult life. He's a friend of Donald Trump, a friend of Bill Clinton, he was a friend of Alan Dershowitz, who's the prominent Boston attorney. He was a friend of Prince Andrew. He's a friend of Saudi Prince, the current Saudi ruler. I know his name. It escapes me at the moment. But the current Saudi prince who is in charge of everything. I was a friend of former Israeli prime minister who has not been named. Not Benjamin Netanyahu, but one of the previous prime ministers who has not been named. And scientists and financiers and other prominent people. Jeffrey Epstein walked among the most powerful people on the planet. Jeffrey Epstein also had a deep and abiding fondness for girls who were between the ages of 14 and 16. And to hear the stories from some sources, was surrounded by them all the time. Had an island, bought an island in the Caribbean, and would fly 14 to 16-year-old girls in to satisfy his sexual urges. Had a private plane known as the Lolita Express. That's what he called it. Private jet to take him to the island. He called it the Lolita Express. Bill Clinton racked up a lot of miles on the Lolita Express. And one of the things that has been said about the Lolita Express is that there were always 14 to 16-year-old girls on the plane available for anything Jeffrey may need. We have Virginia Giuffre, who has filed a lawsuit saying that Jeffrey Epstein, not only did he have sex with her, but that he told her to have sex with other people, including Prince Andrew, the brother of Prince Charles, including the former governor of New Mexico. He's been named Scott Booker. He says, I don't know what any of this is. And so he's denying it. Everyone, of course, is denying it. Everyone's saying, nope, people are making this up. This never happened. There are a lot of stories coming from a lot of different places. And there are a lot of very powerful people involved. This is not the first sex scandal of this type by a long shot. There have been others in the United Kingdom. There have been others in the United States. They all end the same way. The chief ringleader, the chief witnesses, all wind up dead. Nobody ever goes to trial. Now, how does that happen? Are they persuaded to kill themselves? Are they told, you kill yourself, or we're going to make you die slow? Did someone get to Mr. Epstein in prison and murder him? Was one of these sleeping guards, or both of these sleeping guards, complicit? Is the warden complicit? And that's why he's alone in his cell. Was the video camera not pointed at the cell at all, so that we don't, at the cell door at all, so that we don't know if anybody came and went from that cell? That's a question that hasn't been answered yet. And we're still waiting on an answer to that question. All that's been said about the video cameras is that there was no footage inside the cell, that there was a video camera pointed at the door, but nothing inside the cell, and no video that showed anything unusual. So was the video camera on? Was anyone in the hallway around the time that he died? These are things that the investigation should be looking at. Is the investigation looking into those things? Because here's the thing. When you start getting a Saudi prince and an Israeli prime minister and a former president of the United States involved in this, we're talking about people that have extraordinary means and extraordinary access to individuals who can make problems go away. Now, Sunday, the mainstream media spent all day blowing up the conspiracy theories. And I'm not going to sit here and give you a conspiracy theory, okay? I have one. And if you find me in a bar, I might tell you what it is. I'm not going to say it on the air. And I don't know that it's necessarily what happened. I don't know that it's not what happened. All I know is that it's plausible. Whatever your personal theory is on this, it is plausible. You can put forward the idea with a certain level of confidence that somebody got into that prison and murdered Jeffrey Epstein. You can just as easily believe the idea that Jeffrey Epstein was allowed to kill himself through extraordinary negligence. You could also believe the idea that Jeffrey Epstein was given an opportunity to kill himself. Cellmates removed. The guards are asleep. You're going to have 3 hours on Friday night to do the right thing, Jeffrey. Or it's going to get really ugly for you. And believe me, Jeffrey Epstein knows who he's been hanging around with, what he can say, what they've done, and the kind of things that could happen to him if he says those things. One of those three possibilities is the answer here. Either Jeffrey Epstein was given the opportunity to kill himself and took it, and all of this was set up. Number two, foreign agents, police, CIA, FBI, whatever you want to take it, whoever you think might be responsible, entered the prison and killed him. Or number three, everybody just kind of dropped the ball and the guy was suicidal anyway and he ended his own life. Out of those three possibilities, given the suspicious nature of the previous suicide attempt, number three seems the least likely in all of this. It seems much more likely that either somebody got in there and killed the guy, or he was given an opportunity to kill himself and told that that's the thing that he should do. Now, who said that? We'll never know, because Jeffrey Epstein is dead. What did they threaten him with? We'll never know. Maybe he just was suicidal and everybody just screwed up. Government screws things up like you wouldn't believe. And one of the things I always say about conspiracy theories is that any conspiracy is only as good as its weakest link. And this is where most conspiracy theories fall apart. Somebody sits around and like, you know what, 9/11 was an inside job. No, it's not. There is no possible way it was an inside job, because you would need dozens, if not hundreds, of people to pull something like that off. And the more people you have, the more weak links you have, and the more likely someone's going to talk. In this case, we got three people. We got two guards who were asleep and a warden, who are the only ones who might know what was going on in the prison around that point in time. I'm sure there are other inmates around there, but depending on how I haven't seen footage of the inside of this unit. I don't know if they can hear things. I don't know if they can see things. Either this is gross negligence. Hey, it's your government. Where you leave a phone pole in the middle of a bike path and then just paint the bike path around it. or this was orchestrated. Either one of those is entirely possible in this case. Given who is involved, given how much is at stake for the people who are involved. And by the way, the ultimate outcome of this is, despite all the noise coming from the Justice Department, this case is done. No one else is going to be prosecuted. No one else is going to be arrested. The victims are all going to get a piece of Jeffrey Epstein's estate, and that's going to be the end of it. You think they're going to go after Ghislaine Maxwell or somebody else to try and make an example out of this? There is no chance. No chance. It's over. It's done. Ghislaine Maxwell will wind up dead before she ever winds up saying anything that she knows to anyone in law enforcement. You can make bank on that. 855-915-9636. It has been kind of a tough week over at CNN. And I learned something new from CNN, which surprises me because I don't usually expect them to teach me anything new. Andrew Cuomo, who you may know as CNN anchor, he is on after Anderson Cooper and before Don Lemon and the Low IQ News Hour, was out the other night having dinner with his family. Chris Cuomo, rather. Andrew's his brother. Andrew's the one that that's always going to run for governor. I get the Cuomos confused because I just want to go to Andrew. I don't know why that is. So he's out having dinner with his wife and his daughter. And a guy walks up to him. The guy may have had a camera running from the beginning. This may have been a setup. Even if this isn't a setup, don't do this. Okay? Don't do this. If you're out and you see a celebrity hanging out with their family, trying to have dinner, don't go up to their table. Don't walk up to them. Don't say anything to them. Leave them alone. Don't bother them. Time and a place. And if somebody's out having dinner with their family, that is not the time or the place. Okay? If you run into them at the coat check and they're by themselves and you want to say, hey, love your work, you know, shake their hand, it's fine. Okay? I interrupted Willem Dafoe during the intermission of a show that I was at in New York to say, I love your work. He was talking to a friend of his, and I walked over and I'm like, I'm sorry to bother you. I love your work. You're awesome. And he smiled, he shook my hand, he said, that doesn't bother me at all. Then I let him get right back to his conversation. Time and a place. So this guy walks up to Cuomo, who, as we know, is on between Anderson Cooper and the Low IQ News Hour with Don Lemon. More on him later. And the New York Post gives us this account. A man sent cable news host Chris Cuomo into a flying rage when he called the anchor Fredo, an apparent insult referencing Fredo Corleone, the ineffective son of Vito Corleone in The Godfather. Quote, punk-ass bitches from the right call me Fredo. My name is Chris Cuomo. I'm an anchor on CNN, the newsman says in the video, which was shared on Twitter Monday morning. Fredo is from The Godfather. He was a weak brother, and the use of it to an Italian is disparaging, he continues. The 49-year-old actor tells the man that the name Fredo is as offensive to Italian Americans as the N-word is to African Americans. As I said, I learned something new this weekend. Apparently, calling an Italian Fredo is the same thing as calling a black person the N-word. I am 50 years old. I had no idea. No idea. Chris Cuomo goes on. Don't effing insult me like that. You call me Fredo. It's like I call you punk bitch. You like that. The man in the video insists that he believed the anchor's real name was Fredo. But Cuomo, a dad of three, doesn't buy it. Quote, you did not think that. Stand up like a man. Own what you said. The situation then escalates with Cuomo telling the man, I'll effing throw you down these stairs like a effing punk. You're going to call me Fredo. Take a effing swing. I'll effing wreck your S. A clip reportedly was filmed Sunday on Shelter Island by an anonymous fan of the right, far right-wing website and blog. That's the Point with Brandon, and later shared on Twitter and YouTube, where it went viral. A CNN spokesperson told the Post, Chris Cuomo defended himself when he was verbally attacked with the use of an ethnic slur. I told you I learned something new from CNN. With the use of an ethnic slur in an orchestrated setup, we completely support him. All right. I wasn't there. I don't know if this was a deliberate setup or not. Let's assume that it was. Okay. Sean Hannity came out and said Chris Cuomo was right. Chris Cuomo was owed an apology. He doesn't need to apologize to anybody. I agree with that. As I said, if you go out and you see somebody famous, you see a celebrity who, you know, isn't an attention-seeking individual, somebody who isn't a Kardashian, somebody who isn't a real housewife, somebody who isn't sitting there like, look at me, hoping that you're going to buy them free drinks, leave them alone. And actually, if it's one of those attention-seeking celebrities, leave them alone, too. You will wreck their night by not paying attention to them. And when they say, don't you know who I am, just be like, no? Who are you? Should I be familiar with your work? So Chris Cuomo is right to defend himself. Where he's wrong and where CNN is wrong is with this idea that calling an Italian Fredo is somehow an ethnic slur and anywhere in the vicinity of the use of the N-word. And they have been rightfully dragged and should be rightfully dragged for saying this. Okay. This is where all of the outrage culture gets us. This is where all of the offense culture gets us, okay? Chris Cuomo is a yilly. Now, that generally is an argument in favor, in my book, because he didn't go to Harvard, okay? And we got enough of those around here. I got more respect for the yilly than the Harvardites. He's also Italian, okay? I love Italians. Everybody knows my co-host Lisa Nichols here on the show used to be an Italian or was Italian. My former co-host Lisa Nichols is Italian. I want to say that she's formerly Italian. She's still Italian. She's Italian. I used to pick on her all the time. I used to go toe to toe with Joe Ligotti on 96.9 when it was WTKK. This is WMFO at Medford. He's an Italian. And I'll tell you a thing about Italians. Okay, the difference between Italians and Irish. You say something that offends an Italian, they will stand there and they will scream at you for 20 minutes. They'll just yell at you for 20 minutes. And they'll try and pick a fight with you. They'll be like, come on, throw a punch, throw a punch, throw a punch. And after 20 minutes of yelling at you, they're going to be like, get this guy out of here. And it's done. And they'll forget about it and they'll move on. They like to scream and yell. They like to make a lot of noise. Bark is worse than their bite. You say something that offends an Irishman, the Irishman will repeat what you just said quietly, and then you will get hit in the face. And then it's on. There's no warning. There's no screaming and yelling. They just repeat what you said quietly and then hit you in the face. So if an Irishman starts repeating what you say quietly, duck, is the advice there. If an Italian starts yelling at you, you're safe. It's when Italians stop yelling at you that you need to worry. But Cuomo is just completely out of his mind here, okay? And I guarantee you, every one of his buddies right now is busting him by calling him Fredo. He probably woke up the next morning to a bunch of text messages from all his buddies going, hey, Fredo, how you doing? Hey, Fredo, you still upset? What's going on over there, Fredo? Fredo is the traitor, is the brother who turns on the Corleone family and gets killed in the Godfather saga. And so, yes, it is insulting to call someone Fredo. And especially if you're talking about someone like Chris Cuomo, whose brother is Andrew Cuomo, okay, who may or may not be running for governor. Cuomo's got a chip on his shoulder, you know, and he's a loudmouth guy. So you walk up to that guy and you call him Fredo, yeah, you're going to get a reaction out of him. It's where he goes with it. That's the problem. I got no problem at all. You want to call this guy a punk-ass bitch for provoking you in public? By all means, do that, because this guy is a punk-ass bitch. And you shouldn't be provoking people in public. But to say that calling somebody Fredo is the equivalent of the N-word is pure insanity. And for CNN to back this up, they backed it up. They backed it up. They put out a statement saying Chris Cuomo was verbally attacked with the use of an ethnic slur. Fredo is not an ethnic slur. By any stretch of the imagination, is Fredo an ethnic slur? There's CNN. There's the outrage culture. There's everybody getting bent out of shape out of it. You know, so I guess we can't use the word Fredo anymore. If I have Italians on, I can't call them Fredo anymore. I don't know what to do with this anymore. It's getting to the point where you just can't say anything without somebody getting upset and saying, you know what? First it was the Make America Great Again hat is the same as a KKK hood. Okay, that's insane. That's not true. That's completely insane. Now we have Fredo is the same thing as the N-word to an Italian. No, it's not. And if you want to prove that, by the way, I don't recommend that you do this, but you can go find an Italian and call him Fredo. And you can go find an African-American and call him the N-word. And note the difference in reactions that you get from the two of them. And I think you will discover they are very, very different. Now, that would have been bad enough for CNN, having this Chris Cuomo thing go viral. But then today, we find out that Don Lemon is in a little bit of trouble himself. From Mediaite, man sues CNN's Don Lemon for alleged assault at Sag Harbor Bar. Now, Don Lemon, we know, is the host of the Low IQ News Hour on CNN, 10 o'clock at night. It's good for putting you to sleep because it shuts your brain cells down as you watch. A man is suing Don Lemon, claiming the CNN host attacked him at a Hamptons bar last summer. The suit obtained by Mediaite was filed Sunday and seeks unspecified damages for emotional pain and suffering. The plaintiff in this lawsuit has previously displayed a pattern of contempt for CNN on his social media accounts, a CNN spokesperson told Mediaite in a statement. I don't know if this is the same spokesperson that believes Fredo is an ethnic slur, but I'm going to guess that it is. This claim follows his unsuccessful threats and demands for an exorbitant amount of money from Don Lemon. Don categorically denies these claims, and this matter does not merit any further comment at this time. That's a lot of words to say no comment. Methinks the lady doth protest too much. Dustin Heiss claims Lemon attacked him at a Sag Harbor dive bar, Merle's, in July 2018. Heiss, who was working at a bartender at another Hamptons watering hole at the time, said he approached Lemon at the bar one night after recognizing him. Heiss tried to get Mr. Lemon's attention and offered to buy Mr. Lemon a drink, the suit claims. The CNN host declined, saying he was, quote, just trying to have a good time. Later in the night, the suit says, Lemon approached Heiss. Please cover the children's ears for what I'm about to give you. Mr. Lemon, who was wearing a pair of shorts, sandals, and a T-shirt, put his hand down the front of his own shorts and vigorously rubbed his genitalia, removed his hand, and shoved his index middle fingers in plaintiff's mustache and under plaintiff's nose, the suit says. Heiss said Lemon repeatedly shoved his fingers in his face and asked, quote, do you like... I will use some kinder language here. Do you like lady parts or men parts? Heiss claims he left the bar shocked and humiliated. As for CNN's claims that Heiss's social media accounts displayed contempt for the network, a Twitter account under the name Dustin Heiss has been deleted, so we don't know. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. An Instagram post from January 2017, purportedly posted by Heiss and obtained by Mediaite, showed him posting in front of CNN's headquarters in Atlanta along with the caption, quote, touring the CNN center today, or as Trump would say, the home of fake news, LOL. In a statement to Mediaite, Heiss's attorney pushed back on CNN's claims about Heiss's social media posts. Quote, the assertion that Mr. Heiss would put himself through the painful process of filing a sexual assault lawsuit against his attacker all because he doesn't like a cable TV station is ludicrous. Rather, he took down his social media accounts on the day he filed the lawsuit against Don Lemon because he's a private citizen and wants to protect himself from CNN's heavy-handed tactics. Do you believe that Don Lemon stuck his hand down his pants and then rubbed his fingers in the face of a bar patron in Sag Harbor. Have you ever seen the New Year's Eve show on CNN and seen Don Lemon get sloppy drunk? Now, look, this one goes way beyond the pale. This goes way beyond. The suit's been filed. So clearly, the individual filing the suit, Mr. Heiss, thinks there's a case here and has been able to persuade a lawyer in this he said, she said, or he said, he said situation that this happened. And is credible enough to convince a lawyer that this happened and is credible enough to get this case in front of a judge. Does that mean that this actually happened? No. It really strains belief that Don Lemon would do this. Then again, we've seen wacky stuff come out of famous people all the time. So it's not impossible, but I don't think it's very likely. Now, CNN's defense, oh, this guy just doesn't like CNN, that's nonsense too. And I agree with Mr. Heiss's lawyer when he says that, look, I don't care how much you hate a news network. You're not going to file a lawsuit against one of their anchors because you don't like the news network. Oh, and by the way, the damage that will be done to Don Lemon by this lawsuit and by this coming out would normally result in a very large defamation countersuit. And we'll have to wait and see if that defamation countersuit is filed. Because the filing of the defamation countersuit generally gives you some idea of how convinced the accused is that this is all a setup and that they're not guilty. No defamation lawsuit doesn't look quite as good for Don Lemon. So maybe you want to file the defamation lawsuit, you know, just for the optics. And by the way, you're on after Chris Cuomo. Don't call him Fredo. He doesn't like that. It's WMFO Medford. As if CNN isn't having a hard enough time, which arguably they deserve. There are other things going on in the media. And I've said I'm not going to discuss what's happening in the election until we get closer to November, until we get into that one-year timeline. But there are aspects of it. We're not going to talk about policy. We're not going to talk about individual candidates and how they're doing or any of that. But there are aspects of the campaign that are worth exploring because they have an impact on your life. And they bring up some interesting points. This is a very interesting point. It's been brought up. This is from The Hill. And The Hill, you know, right-leaning. I'm not gonna argue that they're not right-leaning. But they're right-leaning in the same sense that Politico is left-leaning. Between The Hill and Politico, you get a pretty good overview of coverage of what's happening in Washington, D.C. Do they have biases? Yes. Are they 100% biased information? No, they're not. It's not like we're talking about Fox News and MSNBC here. Both of these sites are a bit more to the center than some of the, you know, traditional news media sites. But this is from The Hill. Democratic contenders unload on news media. The Democratic presidential contenders are letting loose with a barrage of attacks against the news media, ripping national outlets for what they view as biased coverage of their campaigns or unfair double standards in covering President Trump. Senator Bernie Sanders is leading the way, making his grievances with, quote, corporate media, end quote, central to his anti-establishment campaign. The Sanders campaign took it up a notch this week, calling out CNN and NBC by name and making the case that the Washington Post is covering him negatively because he's been critical of the newspaper's billionaire owner, Jeff Bezos. Top media personalities are firing back at Sanders and accusing him of taking a page from Trump, who routinely attacks major outlets such as the New York Times and CNN as fake news. But Sanders is far from the only Democratic candidate to vent frustration with the media's campaign coverage. Let me stop here for a second. all we've heard for the last 2 years, Donald Trump hates the media. Donald Trump hates the media. Donald Trump hates the media. Donald Trump demonizes the media. Donald Trump is trying to get America to stop trusting the news media because they don't like the way, because he doesn't like the way they cover him. And who have we heard a lot of this from? The Democrats and the left, and in particular, left-wing stunt news media outlets like CNN with Jim Acosta, who is an embarrassment to the journalism profession. Okay? This is all we've heard for the last 2 years. Oh, it's Trump versus the media, and Trump's trying to take down the media, and Trump's trying to destroy America's faith in the media. Well, so is Bernie Sanders. You like apples? How do you like them apples? A top surrogate for former Vice President Joe Biden's campaign lashed out at reporters this week for giving outsized coverage to the former Vice President's recent verbal gaffes. And former Rep. Beto O'Rourke of Texas and former San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro, oh boy, did that guy's brother screw up, have both blasted the press for what they describe as applying too light of a touch with Trump on issues pertaining to race. So this is Beto O'Rourke and Julian Castro telling the media, you don't call Trump racist often enough. You don't use the word racist to describe Trump often enough. Now, that's just straight up manipulation. That's just straight up politics and manipulation right there. All right? We've heard the word racist used to describe Donald Trump by the media. We've heard the word white supremacist. Our esteemed Senator Elizabeth Warren over the weekend finally took off the gloves and straight up called Donald Trump a white supremacist. And there have been others who have equated his followers with white supremacists. People who vote for Donald Trump, people who wear MAGA hats, white supremacists. And they should be eradicated. These are things that people are actually saying. Now, are there white supremacists who are fans of President Trump? Yes, there are. I don't doubt that for a second. Are there white supremacists who are fans of Bernie Sanders? Yes, there are. There may even be a few white supremacists who are fans of Elizabeth Warren. We know the guy that killed 9 people in Dayton last weekend was Team Warren and Team Bernie. So no side has a monopoly on the good people or the bad people. The Democrats want you to think all the bad people are Republicans. 100% not true. The criticism of the media comes after Democrats have spent years, let me just say this, warning that Trump's attacks against the press have undermined trust in an institution they describe as a pillar of a functioning democracy. It's not just a pillar. It is the basis of the republic. I have sat here so many times over the last couple of months and made this same point. Without a functioning news media, you cannot have an informed public. Without an informed public, you cannot have a functional republic. It's that simple. If everyone is checked out, if nobody believes what anybody is saying anymore, if there is no one to tell us what reality is beyond what we can see, hear, smell, touch, and taste, there is no republic. It all comes apart. And Democrats, for the last 2 years, Trump's ruining the media, Trump's ruining the media, Trump's ruining the media. Now the shoe's on the other foot. Well, the media, that's all fake news. They're a bunch of liars. They're biased. They don't give us enough coverage. They don't give us the right coverage. Democrats are not completely trying to tear down the Fourth Estate, and they're not putting journalists in danger like the president is doing, said Andrew Feldman, a Democratic strategist with a focus on media relations. But the ultimate goal for a campaign is to get their message across, and it can be very frustrating when that doesn't happen. Here is the typical left-wing weasel. Left-wing weasel behavior right here. They're not as bad as Trump, and they're just frustrated. Bernie Sanders had a bad day, so he called out the media. Joe Biden had a bad day, so he called out the media. He's not pathological about it like Donald Trump. Donald Trump hates the media. We're just upset with the media. Give me a freaking break, guy. Because this cuts to the heart of the hypocrisy. And it is the hypocrisy that drives me nuts. I don't have a problem with Democrats. don't have a lot of problem with Democrat ideas, okay? I think the way that they want to run an economy is complete nonsense, all right? But I'm pro-choice, okay? I'm pro-gay marriage. I'm pro programs that support the less fortunate. I am pro-immigration. I'm pro a lot of these things. I'm not pro-hypocrisy. And when you're doing the same thing that the president is doing, when you're saying the media is biased and don't trust the media and don't listen to what the media says about me and the media is distorting everything, the only thing that's missing are the actual phrases fake news, which are probably going to start coming out next, and enemy of the people. And by the way, the president was right when he said both of those things. Because there is fake news out there masquerading as legitimate journalism and legitimate media. And some of these organizations have become the enemy of the people because they are run by activists. And I can explain to you exactly how this happened. Years ago, journalism used to be a respected profession. You didn't make a lot of money, but if you put in your time and you built a reputation for yourself, you had a job for life and you had a comfortable middle-class living. And you were set. All you had to do was keep up the good work. Don't plagiarize anybody. Don't lie. And you could have a great career. People got into journalism because they wanted to travel all over the world. People got into journalism because they wanted to inform people and they wanted to help people understand how the political system worked so they could make informed choices. They took the role and the responsibility of being behind that microphone or being in front of that camera or being behind that keyboard seriously. Well, around about the 1990s and the early 2000s, when the internet took over, writing became content. Writing became a commodity. And the journalism industry has suffered harder than almost any other industry out there. Because every newsroom is ultimately run by a business that is sitting there saying, why are we paying for this when there are people doing it for free online? We can get those people who are writing for free now to write for us for $10 and tell them, hey, you work for CNN. You work for NBC. You work for the New York Times. Isn't that prestigious? And the only people who are willing to take advantage of this now, like the good writers, the people who would have been good journalists, are now going into law. And they're going into public relations. Because you can make a heck of a lot of money doing that. More money than you... There were always good writers that went into those fields. Or they're going into corporate communications. There are always good writers who went into those fields because you could make a lot of money doing those things. Now it's not even a choice. Now it's not even... You know, the altruist in me says journalism and 10% less salary. But the rational side of me says, I want to make $80,000 a year. Now it's like, if you go into journalism, you're going to get paid nothing, and you're going to have no benefits, and you're going to be working long hours, and you're going to get fired in 3 years with nothing to show for it. Or you can go make a nice upper-class living as a lawyer, corporate communications, PR, advertising, any of those spaces. It's a no-brainer. Anybody... The altruism disappears when that money starts showing up, right? So what we have now is newsrooms run by former bloggers who have no concept of what journalism is. All they know is Orange Man bad, Elizabeth Warren good, Bernie bad, Pete Buttigieg good, Beto O'Rourke don't know, Julian Castro bad, Ted Cruz bad, and this is how everything gets written. And these campaigns are all sitting around. All these Democrats are sitting around now saying, wait a minute, maybe we shouldn't have been attacking Donald Trump for the last 2 years. Turns out the guy had a point. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. When we come back, a sign of fall, as I bring you the strangest thing from the past week and my favorite thing from the past week here on WMFO Medford.
I'm Sarah, and this is my story.
I'm Ellen, and this is my story. One night, I was at a bar.
I was having fun with my friends. I had one too many drinks. I got behind the wheel to go home.
I got a cab to go home.
All of a sudden, from out of nowhere, a squirrel ran across the road. It happened so quickly, I barely had time to react.
The cabbie barely had time to react.
I swerved.
The cab swerved.
I can't believe it. I hit a guy.
I cannot believe it. The cabbie just missed a guy.
I wish I took a cab.
Thank goodness I took a cab.
You have the choice to save a life. Don't drive buzzed. It's a decision you'll never regret. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is the Big Picture on the Tell Mikey D, coming your way in just about 5 minutes from now with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number, and we close out the show as we do every week. First with What's Hot, my favorite thing from the past week, and I know somebody is going to be very excited about this. Maybe a lot of you are going to be very excited about this. I said there is a sign of fall in the air. And sure enough, the tyranny of pumpkin spice begins next Wednesday as Dunkin' Donuts will be releasing its pumpkin spice coffee and brand new pumpkin spice latte next Wednesday to start the second to last Wednesday of autumn with a touch of autumn, or the second to last Wednesday of August with a touch of autumn, because we need that, I guess. Those of you who prefer the Starbucks pumpkin latte are going to have to wait until August 27th. Starbucks will be out on August 27th. That is still a record early release for their pumpkin latte. Now, in addition to the pumpkin spice coffee at Dunkin' Donuts, I am intrigued by this. And this is what's got me excited. They're going to have apple cider donuts. And that's a new thing for them. Everybody likes apple cider donuts this time of year. They're also going to have apple cider munchkins rolled in cinnamon spice. So I think I'm going to be making the excursion to Dunkin' Donuts to get me some of them munchkins. But you know what? You can keep your pumpkin spice everything. You can keep your pumpkin beer. You can keep the whole pumpkin nonsense. I know it's fall, but we don't have to pumpkin spiceify everything, do we? And we close out the show with That's the Thing That Happened, the strangest thing from the past week. If I could actually get this device to input this. There it goes. I'm just waiting for the machinery to kick in. The United Kingdom. We don't often get across the pond, but this one is from the United Kingdom. I think the last time they made That's the Thing That Happened, it was Bodie McBoatface. Still a meme. Police in Gwent County, United Kingdom, have warned social media users to stop making fun of a suspect's mugshot and threatened arrests. Police looking for Jermaine Taylor, 21, posted a mugshot on social media showing that he has a badly receding hairline and a bald patch in the middle of his fade haircut, leaving him with a tuft of hair on either side. Police got 89,000 comments after posting the picture. Few of them helpful, such as, push his release date back further than his hairline, that should teach him. He was last seen in town. Police are combing the area. And looks like his hairline is on the run too. Police warned users last week against posting threatening or harassing comments, but by Monday they had thanked people for their support, adding, quote, we must admit a few of those comments have made us laugh. Mr. Taylor remains at large and is likely seeking a barber. You can find that shot online if you look up Jermaine Taylor, or if you look up the Gwent police. It was quite the story. And I do encourage you to take a look at that photo because it is one of the most hilarious mugshots you were ever going to see. This guy really needs to embrace The change in his hairline, much as I have embraced the change in my hairline, shave it all, guy. You're not fooling anybody. That is just about all the time that we have for this week. Don't forget, it's autumn next Wednesday. Pumpkin spice coming your way. Too soon. I really got to say, too soon. And we're heading into, for those of you who may have been so busy this summer that you're not really keeping track of that sort of thing, we got two weekends left, folks. We've got this weekend and next weekend, and then it's Labor Day. So if you haven't made any plans to get out and enjoy some summertime activities, please do that. Go visit an ice cream stand. Go to Salem Willows. Play some old pinball machines. Go up to Hampton Beach. Check out the fireworks. Go to Canobie Lake Park. Take a ride on the Untamed or the Yankee Cannonball. There's a ton of stuff to do. And these 2 weeks at the end of August, even though everybody's sort of already shifting into back-to-school mode and getting everything ready, these 2 weeks of August are one of the best times of year here in New England. Get out. Take advantage of it. Stay away from the green algae. Stay away from the fresh water. But do get out and enjoy everything that the region has to offer before autumn comes and we're hip deep in leaves and running the leaf blower every 5 minutes. So that is all the time that we have. Until next week, stay safe, everybody.